Hello, everyone. Welcome to But Why Though Reviews. This week, we are diving into the weird and wonderful world of Stranger Things Season 4. I am Aaron Phillips. I'm a contributing writer at But Why Though. And just like the strange and wacky kids of Stranger Things, I would not go into this review without my squad, my crew for Dungeons & Dragons. With me, I have CJ. Say hi, CJ.
Hello.
And Naysha.
Hey, guys.
Awesome. All right. Both CJ and Naysha are currently podcasters and contributing writers at the site, so you can find all their wonderful work there. But guys, it's Stranger Things Season 4. How are we feeling?
All hope is lost. Yeah, CJ? That's all I got.
It was worth the wait. I'll say that. It was worth the wait.
Yeah.
A very, very long wait.
So to set the tone for anyone who has not yet dived into or gone back into Hawkins after our three years. It's hard to believe it's been that long. We are currently back in Hawkins for 8-9 months since we've last been there. I think the events of season three left us around July 4th, summertime. The Russians had been kicked out of Starcourt Mall. 11 had lost their powers. The buyers moved to California. It was in a really strange place, and it left us with a lot more questions than answers, I say. I know I kind of recently wrote an article kind of posing my questions heading into this, just because there was just so much going on. And then as we get into season four, there's a new villain that's emerged. Strange murders seem to be going on. And it's all kicking off again. It's all very interesting to how it starts. So I guess my question to you guys starting off the show is, what were your initial thoughts before, as you've kind of, you know, watched the trailers before the show kicked off? What were your thoughts heading into it? Naysha, you want to start?
Sure. My initial thought was really like, I just want to know if Hopper is dead, or is he in the Upside Down,
yeah,
or is he dead? I had accepted it was one of two things.
Yeah.
A third, did he turn it, like, maybe did he turn into a monster? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, that was like a wild theory I had. Like, that's really what I was approaching. Like, I just want to know what Hopper's status is. Going into it also, I hate Mike. I make that very vocally known on social media. Like, I can't stand that child. And I went into it prepared for Mike to be annoying and obsessed with Eleven because she's a superhero. Other things, just more Erica. That's also what I wanted. And they delivered on that. So I was not expecting the dynamics to have changed so much.
Okay.
That's something that I'm like, oh yeah, it's gonna be the tight-knit group of little kids again. Like, no, they're all freshmen now and some of them are jerks.
What about you, CJ?
Well, going in, I was expecting to I wanted to know more about the Upside Down. Yes, we've seen all the monsters like the Demogorgons and the Mind Flayer, but I was like, okay, what's next? And the villain kind of answers that a little bit. I also kind of wanted to see how they handled it, because as we know, most of the cast is gone from preteens to actual teens. And it's like change is a big part of the story. Lucas is now a jock, and Steve and Dustin, I mean, Mike and Dustin are still, you know, playing Dungeons and Dragons and stuff. And Will and Eleven are off in California, and Hopper is all the way over in Russia. It's not, yeah. So yeah, everybody's in a different place than where they were in season three, and that was fun. And also, what I was also expecting was to see how Eleven deals with the loss of her powers, because again, she hadn't had a normal childhood, and now she's more or less lost the one thing. And I was surprised with how much this series kind of focused on her and her past and her story. And I really liked that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It, like I said, it season three kind of left us, I felt like, with a lot of questions. Again, putting, you know, the teaser of showing, you know, the American and like the Russian gulag and things like that. Like, again, my thoughts were like, well, how do the Russians even tie into this whole thing? You know, how's that going to be explored? Then you've got, you know, obviously the Buyers moving out to California, like with a now powerless 11. I was kind of like, okay, well, obviously that's not going to stay the same way. Or if it does, like, what are they going to do with that? There's just a lot of questions. And again, we really hadn't got much of a backstory in relation to, you know, 11's history at Hawkins Lab. Like, how did that all come about? Because it still felt there was a lot of story left to be told there. Mm-hmm. And then again, same thing that you guys already said as well, like, you know, in relation to the Upside Down, there's a lot there that has not even been touched. I think it's, we've gotten very, very little there. So it's kind of been very interesting. So heading into the season, I think that's where my mind was at, was because obviously we'd had the announcement in the months leading up to the show that, you know, obviously we have season 4, part 1, season 4, part 2, and then the final season of season 5, which is, I think there's still a lot of confusion out there. I don't know if you guys have found this with talking to other people. A lot of people I spoke to thought that this season that had just dropped was it. Like, that was the finale. Like, it was, you know, before they'd even watched the show. So I don't know if they kind of done a great job at marketing the fact that, you know, there would be more to come. And even from what I read, from what the Duffers have posted, that there'd be potential spin-offs coming as well, which would be exciting to see how they explore that. So, but yeah, so, I mean, I was definitely excited leading into the show. And it seemed from the early reviews, it was, I think, CJ, you kind of coined the phrase bigger, darker, and a bolder or something yeah. like that. And I know as we kind of like dive into actually talking about the show now, it definitely felt like they turned the dial up, like from all the, you know, previous seasons that have come before it and what they've done. They just went, we're going to like crank this like way up now and see what we can get away with. So CJ, after having actually watched the show, what were your actual reactions then?
Shock, awe, and surprise. Stranger Things often is described as a blend between Steven Spielberg and Stephen King. And this season, they just had to go all the way up with the King, which again is not surprising given how many King adaptations are up. But yeah, there is some really dark stuff when, especially in the opening. My God, the opening. Oof. And the fact that this season is essentially one big love letter to A Nightmare on Elm Street, from how the villain operates to Freddy Krueger himself, Robert Englund, making a really great cameo. Yes. Also, this is a very long season. Every episode is about an hour long, and the 7th episode clocks in at just shy of 100 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, I get it. It's been 3 years and you want to try and, you know, get the most out of the binge. On the other hand, it kind of feels like a marathon at times. And some of the plot lines, especially Will and Jonathan, let's be clear, I don't think the Duffers knew what to do with Will after season 2.
They did not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a bit of a double-edged sword. You get more story, but it kind of feels tough. You got to tough it out. So yeah, but I do think, particularly where 11 is concerned, that the story is worth it, as well as Max. I think that Millie Bobby Brown and Sadie Sink are the MVPs of this season.
Absolutely.
Like, say it again, buddy. It's absolutely.
Dear Billy is a really, really great episode editor. Probably one of the best in terms of how it deals with trauma and stuff. So yes, mm-hmm. Sadie Sink,
just A+. Give that young lady all the awards, please, because that episode had me just bawling. Just survivor's remorse, guilt, trauma, grief. And I did not expect for them to give Max this as in-depth of a character arc as we got, but I'm really glad they did, because it really gave, one, the actress like more of a, just she could just like spread her wings a little bit more on the role. Like, she wasn't just like Eleven's best friend, and she wasn't the new girl. And like, she's really evolved from being like the new girl in town to, your brother died in front of you, and that is traumatizing, and you're dealing with like isolating yourself but needing help, not knowing how to ask for that help. And then also, like, I would say Max has, so for since she was introduced, she's kind of been like the more sane and stable, or one of the more sane and stable of the crew, where she's just like, she'll have a logical solution for things, and like she's now in the middle of a very illogical situation.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what does that look for? What does that look like for a 14-year-old girl when she's already dealing with trauma and grief and then a supernatural being?
Yeah, I mean, you just nailed it on the head there, Nisha, because like it felt like this season she got a bit more like actual agency with her own story, as opposed to being connected to someone else's story, like the little sister or like the love interest, the new girl, you know, Elle's best friend. Like, she was always kind of used to elevate someone else's position, whereas this season it's about her dealing with that loss and, you know, what she does with it. And she did a phenomenal job, and not only that, I think within that episode she actually gets to engage a bit more with the styles of horror, because that's one of the things I loved about that episode of Dave Willie. It's such a roller coaster of emotions, because and that's one of the things I loved about this season, was the increased element of horror. Like, I'm not going to be able to hear a grandfather clock now without like shivering and just like, because that noise just, and it, I love it. I love it. It's fantastic and it's so unique, but how they just they twist it and they drag the audio out at the end. Oh, it was fantastic. But Sadie Sink does a wonderful job with that episode, where she gets to, you know, engage with it a bit more, and she's more than capable of it. I don't know if you two have seen Fear Street. I think it's 1978.
I haven't. I need
1978. Yeah, yes. That's the one she's in.
And she's phenomenal. She's so good. And like, after having seen her in that, given way more of a prominent role in this season, I'm thinking, you know, she's absolutely more than capable to go out there, and I'd love to see her tackle some other stories and, you know, see what she's got. Like, she's got a bright future ahead of her. So it's very exciting to see. But she did wonderful things with that Dave Billy episode. But yeah, I definitely, for me, like, my initial reaction was just, you know, episode one, you get to the end and, you know, you're, because I think that episode one kind of, it's touching base with everyone, right? Reintroducing some of the characters, it's been 3 years, introducing some of the newer characters, which some of them I loved, some of them I could have done without a bit. I think Argyle was kind of funny, but like, he kind of, at some point, I felt like he sucked some of the time out. And I think that's more so to do with the subplots than anything. But then you had the introduction of, you know, the D&D group, with, and I completely forget my name, and I'm a terrible host. Eddie, thank you.
I love Eddie.
Eddie was wonderful. It was so cool. Like, just so chaotic.
But he that man so is a fun. Chaotic neutral. I totally, yeah.
Truly.
And he had some great, great character interactions there. He really got to show kind of like his range and what he was capable of. But that episode one, that it was fun. You needed a minute. Again, it'd been 3 years. It's 6 months, 9 months in the storyline. So you kind of needed to catch up and find where everyone was. We've got kids in high school, kids, you know, across the country. There was a lot going on. But then as you get to the end, it kind of sets that bar. Like, here's the villain. Here's what he's capable of. And then you kind of go from there. And man, some of those, again, we talked about the audio with the grandfather chimes. Some of the audio that's with the murder, the death of this season was just like,
the body horror.
The crunching. Yeah, the body horror. Yes.
Element.
Yes.
It's like,
yeah. And they really did not hold back. They didn't, you know, I think, and they used some interesting elements, you know, nice, you just said the body horror. I thought they used some interesting elements from season three, where they had the fleshy monster and like the mind flayer like taking over, but this was a whole different level. And again, they really just went, no, we want to make people squeamish, and I don't think it's excessive. It's a good balance of like, to shock and awe, you know, without going over the top. So I loved it. I was such a fan of, you know, what they did, and they just go on to elevate it throughout the season as well. So I was really happy with that. Now, CJ, I know you mentioned some of the character developments of Sadie Sink. What did you think of some of the other characters?
Like I said before, Eleven had a big role. And when it starts off, she's, you know, dealing with high school and stuff. You know, Demon Gorgons are one thing. Percy Brom popular chicks are another. And yeah, thankfully she has Will, but she also kind of is hiding from Mike that life in California kind of sucks. And then in comes the folks from Hawkins Lab to try and get her powers, which, okay, yes, she needs powers to take down the big bad, but also there is a whole can of trauma there. In fact, I feel like most of the female characters in the series are really proactive. You know, you had Eleven working to get back her powers. You had Max dealing with her trauma and losing Billy. And I like how they handled that. They acknowledged that losing Billy was very traumatic, but also didn't say, oh, Billy was really a good guy. Billy sucked. I'm just going to say I'm dying on that hill. Joyce was very proactive in figuring out about Hopper, even if she had to drag Murray's annoying self along with her. Nancy was very proactive too in figuring out about more about the big bad. And I loved her and Robin working together. Oh, Robin was also very proactive. I am very impressed with how all the female characters were very handled this season. As for the male characters, it's hit and miss. I generally love the friction between Mike, Dustin, and
Lucas.
Mike, Dustin, Lucas, yes. Will and Jonathan, again, I mentioned, you could pretty much cut their subplot and do nothing. And the Hopper stuff is, it was cool to see him trying, you know, survive in a Russian prison, but I figured that would have played more of a bigger role in the plot.
I'm still wondering, like, that whole Russia thing still leaves me for a bit of a loop, because there's some interesting elements there, you know, with how they left it at season three. So we obviously know that, you know, in the Russian Gulag, they do have possession of a Demogorgon, and you kind of, like, you know, my question was like, okay, well, how were they able to capture it? How is it there? Because, you know, we saw in season two, once the gates closed, that, you know, connections should be severed. And it looked like, from what we've seen in, you know, season two, season one, the Demogorgons would always find those, like, weak spots in reality and cross over. They had, like, a slight bit of telekinesis themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of curious to see, like, how that plays in. Like, what is the Russian connection there? Because it just kind of feels like it's there, like, oh, it's the 80s, so it's America versus Russia. And
right, it's like another aspect of the Cold War.
Yeah,
or like just like, oh, instead of
like an arms race. Extraterrestrial,
right,
supernatural race for a weapon.
Yeah, they're racing for a parallel dimension for monsters and to harvest and weaponize it, which is just like,
I bet you cash money season five is going to open with them shooting a dog into the upside down. Bet on it.
I will just.
Those Russians.
Honestly. Leave the dogs alone. Leave the dogs out of the meetups.
I will say, obviously, without going into any spoiler territory, I did like, there was a very cool action sequence that takes place within that Russian prison fight scene. And I was very impressed. And I thought, you know, what they highlighted there, they have not highlighted in any other season. And it definitely gave some gravity to the situation as far as, you know, what some of these things are capable of. So I was impressed with that, but I think overall there was just a lot. I'm still feeling like, okay, well, there's some explanation there, rather than just kind of like, oh, it's just, we needed something for these characters to do. Cause I think that's, you know, CJ highlighted that, like, some of the characters there, it's like, well, we need to give them something to do.
Yeah.
We need to keep them busy. As opposed to, like, and it's definitely where I felt with, like, Will, Jonathan, and Mike's kind of, and Argyle's quest, it just kind of just didn't really go where I expected it to, or it didn't feel like it had any, you know, impending gravity on the situation, really.
Yeah, they really do, not saying they're plot devices, but they are plot devices. It kind of feels like that whole road trip search for, you know, we know who, for them, without giving anything away, it just feels like they're gonna come in handy eventually in volume 2 of season 4. Like, yeah, this whole thing that Mike and like in the guys with that road trip, it's like it's gonna play into season, like the second half of the season. I can just see that happening. And it's just like, yeah, I don't really care about Mike and Will's fractured friendship as much as I think I should. But I think it's just because, like you guys mentioned it earlier, the whole season really does feel like it's about change and disconnecting, but also trying to reconnect with your friends. Like, you have to accept that friendships change, where it's like each of them have their own dynamics. I think Dusty's probably the one who's like, we are all who we really are deep down. You guys need to just get your heads out your butts. And then you have like, Mike doesn't know, like he just doesn't know how to separate himself from Eleven outside of being her boyfriend. And
her, and obsessive behavior.
Obsessive. And then it's like the whole, I was still very confused by the conversation with Eleven, like the last conversation they had together. And I was just like, is she saying that, like, is she coming to the realization that Mike would not have these feelings for her if it wasn't for her powers? And that's kind of where that left me.
Yeah, I almost felt like the implication was there was a bit of idolization going on over there, as opposed to liking her for her.
Right, because I don't think Mike, it's this season kind of made me realize, I'm like, I don't think Mike would have had feelings for Eleven if it wasn't for her powers. Yeah. And I think Eleven's coming to, like, is dealing with the fear of, like, without my powers, I'm nothing. But also, who am I without my powers? And on top of that, does this guy I'm in love with love me? Am I not special anymore to him if I am without my powers? And like, I don't know, because Mike's been obsessed with superheroes his entire life, and he sees Eleven as a superhero. And he's young. Kids confuse feelings and affection for love. I think what we could be seeing is them just growing apart and accepting that this isn't love.
Yeah.
But like you said, admiration, idolization.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because like the whole Mike and Eleven thing, that was such a big part of season 1. And then you've got Mike and Will trying to find his friend. Like the whole setup for the show felt pivotal around that dynamic. And now it just doesn't feel as important as it once did. I would say, I don't know about you guys, but I'm far more invested in the Dusty, Eddie, Steve triangle than anything that's going on with Mike. Mike absolutely felt kind of irrelevant. But with everything going on with, you know, Dustin, Steve, and Eddie, I was like, more time there, please, because they are far more interesting. Dustin is just an amazing character. I mean, even I think Lucas got a little bit more time this season. Like, he struggled with that growth of, as far as wanting to do something different, to branch out and to try new things.
I really like that it dealt with that. Like, Lucas was like, yeah, I want to be into basketball, and it turns out he's really good at basketball. And Mike and Dustin are scared that because he's good at basketball, he won't have any time for them. And that actually plays a part during the search for Eddie, because Lucas is like, I'm gonna stick with my friends, which I really liked. Yeah,
and that creates a whole other dynamic within the show, as far as like, you kind of, Lucas gets to kind of witness some of the stuff going on with the town of Hawkins as well. And that was another element this season that we got to see, which you don't really get to see too much of, like the town feeling like they're cursed with everything going on. And, you know, there's almost like a devil in Hawkins. And it was interesting to see that kind of town hall. There was a, you know, that town hall situation later, and some of the basketball members kind of playing a pivotal role. And It was kind of interesting to see all that. And again, Lucas is kind of front and center as he tries to become like a bit more, you know, normal and have a normal life.
Can I just say that it actually is nice to see the townspeople actually acknowledge, okay, there is some crazy stuff going on with our murders and our mall blew up and stuff. But it also plays into the element of satanic panic that was associated with D&D back then, and it's perfect because, again, there are demonic forces at work, but it has nothing to do with a game. It has something to do with this creepy dude in another dimension, and I really like how they played on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I want to quickly move on because we are approaching close to the end of our time, but what did you guys feel like the episode length for this season?
I'm here for it. I think I time wise for like each episode, I think it's exactly what I needed, even if it's a little bit longer. And I don't know if that's more of an issue because there was the pandemic that caused them to have production delays. So then they decided to make things a little bit longer, but I was here for it. Seven episodes felt like a good spot. So I do kind of hope when they come back, I'm hoping volume two is another seven. Like, I know this is going to be part one of a season and part two of a season, but I don't know about you guys. Sometimes 10 episodes don't feel like enough for a season to really have the full arc fleshed out for some of these series. And I think, you know, there's a lot to unpack here. I think they did a really good job with the length of the episodes and the length of the value.
Yeah,
with what they had.
Well, Naisha, I actually can reveal that volume two will consist of the final two episodes, but...
Oh, well.
Episode 8 is an hour and 30 minutes, and episode 9 is a whopping 2 hours and 30 minutes.
I can live with that. I can live with that.
I'm just like an uninterrupted
story.
It's basically a big old movie. And I kind of get it. Again, it's been 3 years, and it's one of Netflix's crown jewels, so of course they're gonna want to pump and stuff, and as you all can probably see from the Upside Down, they pumped a lot of money into this.
Yeah,
I do absolutely feel, however, that a better move would have been to split it into like maybe 5 episodes, like, because again, it feels like there's about 2 seasons worth of story in this story, and I feel like Netflix has done this better with like Masters of the Universe Revelation. I think they handle that split better because they're like 2 halves of a complete story. Here it kind of feels like we got the first two acts of a story, and now we got to wait until July to get the final act.
Right.
I mean I will say I tend to fall Nation's way. Like I love the episode. I just absolutely gorged on it. Just couldn't get enough of it. There's definitely parts where it kind of hits lulls here and there, but you know, overall I was really happy because I know I binged all through the 3 seasons, and I was surprised how quickly, when you're sitting there binging through it, how quickly you go through those prior seasons. So to have longer episodes for 7, you know, for those 7 that we got, I was really happy with what we got, especially, you know, I was kind of weary heading into that finale, but that finale does a phenomenal job. And the way it ends, I was just like, oh man, I'm in. I cannot wait. Like, and I think they laid a lot of groundwork and they took their time getting there. Because essentially it felt like they were setting up, you know, like 2 different paths. And as you get to the end, it all kind of culminates into this big moment. So I was kind of really excited about that. But I'm curious to see now how they tackle those final 2 episodes for part 2 of season 4. And then you've still got season 5. So we've still got, you know, a bit more time coming. We've still got a bit more to set up. And it definitely feels like there's still a lot more going on with the Upside Down than we've been led to believe. So I'm curious. But one thing I did want to ask you, Vecna, are we fans or are we not?
I am a fan. I love the Freddy Krueger vibes and how grotesque he is and the mix of practical and visual effects. And the revelation surrounding him was just, it makes sense, and it's just
his origin my story, so, yeah, is excellent. Yeah,
good stuff.
Yes, I'm also a fan because that reveal, just like the whole time, you're just like, what does all this mean? Why does all this matter? And then suddenly it clicks, and I'm just like, all right, you got me. You got me.
Give
son
me,
of a gun, you got
take
me.
Take my money. Take my money. You've got me.
Yep,
it also functions as a great parallel to 11 because she could have been like him, but she has friends and family, and he's just an outright psychopath.
Yep.
Yeah.
So in another world, that's 11.
I like a good parallel between heroes and villains. What can I say?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a really, really good villain. And again, they spared no expense in his visual attire and how he looks and speaks. And again, that that inspiration of that Freddy Krueger behind him, it was just, oh, it's so good. Again, that horror element that they attach and associate with him, there's such a weight to his power and what he's capable of doing. I was such a fan of that.
I really just want to know, like, was Vecna always in the plans? Or was it like,
yeah.
I want to know, like,
Did
they pivot? Were they going to go somewhere? And I only have that question because from where we started, it really grew. It, like, the cave narrative kind of feels like it was at hand with from season one, where it's like we only knew so much about the, you know, the upside down until like it was revealed to us each season. So it's like here we are now. And it's just like we still don't know that much, but we know more.
yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, so very quick. Naisha, would you recommend watching this? What's your 10-second pitch to anyone to get them to watch season 4?
Yes, absolutely watch it, especially for Lady Applejack. I am a fan. I also now will be making a character for D&D, name her Lady Applejack. But also to see this show come so far and where these characters are, it's just an amazing work of character development, story arcs building out. It's worth a watch. And the horror.
I would definitely recommend it. If you've been waiting, it is worth the wait. If you are into horror, this cranks up the horror. And if you like narratives that are deep and meaty while dealing with genre work, this is definitely it. And yeah, really good stuff here.
I am the same. Lots more answers, lots more questions. Just pulled me in. I love a good story. So lots of mythology and world building there. So absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right, that's all the time we've got for you guys. But Naisha and CJ, where can the people find you?
You guys can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Naisha Plays. That's NEYSHAPLAYS, where y'all can see me talk about anime, manga, and cosplaying and other things like Stranger Things.
CJ.
My Twitter is CJ Writes Things. My Instagram is CJ Writes Stuff. You can find my written work on Bawaitho, Collider, and IGN. And you can also listen to my podcast, Into the Spider-Cast, where I speak of all things Spider-Man.
And I am the host for today's lovely meeting. So thank you too for joining me to talk about everything upside down and the weird, wacky world of Hawkins. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, at British CPA. I am also very active on our wonderful But Why Though Discord. So if you would like to come join us and talk spoilers on Stranger Things, which the three of us are dying to get more into spoilers, you can come find us on our Discord. The link is on our Twitter and I think our Instagram, or you can find it on our website as well. CJ has done a fantastic review of the season. I've asked top 5 questions leading into the season. So lots of good content for you to look up there. And again, if you want to come find us and talk more about the show, definitely, definitely come join our Discord. That's all we've got time for. But thank you, and join us for our next But Why Though reviews.